Hey NDL, welcome back to this week's edition of the NDL podcast. I'm your boy RB, back with my one and only co-host, Jason. Sir, how are you this week?
Doing right. Yeah, Pat, you hear that? One and only co-host.
Yeah, Pat gets a one-time bump, never allowed back. No, I'm just kidding. He did great a couple weeks back, but no, we're excited to be back. Man, a lot has gone on this past week. We've had some upsets. We've had some huge movement in the conference standings. I feel like we're at the point of year or the season, Jason, where all of a sudden a team pops up that's 7-1 that you had no idea was 7-1.
Yeah, and we'll talk about those 7-1 teams, and they'll immediately lose tonight or first thing tomorrow, because that's what happens with this podcast. Man. If we talk about you, you're going to lose. So, speaking of, I should probably pull up the list of my next couple opponents, and we should probably talk about them.
let's talk about Iowa, because I play him tomorrow, and no, I'm just kidding. he actually just did have a nice win against Northwestern, but no, you're right. The NDL media curse, the podcast curse, the game day curse, whatever you want to call it, it is real, because it's been like multiple times now where wherever we've hyped up a game or had game day, or even just I start talking, you know, oh, wow, look out for this team. Bang, they lose the next week. It's happening left and right. No one is safe.
Yeah, we did our podcast last week, talked about Notre Dame, and literally as not an hour after we got done, Stanford 55-24.
Yeah. I think the game started while we were podcasting, and then we got off the podcast and I pulled up the stream and it was like out of hand. And I was like, oh, well, everyone disregard what we just said on the podcast. But no, let's dive right into it. So we have week 7 and 8 recap here, block 4. I'll let you lead it off, Jason. What matchups, results, games, everything, what stands out?
Well, the first one that stood out, and I guess we should probably talk about it real quick, just to remind folks, I think the one that stood out happened about 2 hours after we got done with the podcast, and that was Georgia State 75, Georgia Southern 35.
Oh.
That one stood out, and the emoji, if you haven't looked at the emojis for that score, by the way, on the NDL scoreboard, I still want to know why the two rainbow emojis got put on there. Those are my favorites, but just a reminder, folks, don't break the 35-point rule. We've had, you know, a couple instances here recently where guys have put themselves in a position to possibly break it. And the one thing I would tell you is, if you're wanting to be just safe, punt the ball on first down. Kneel the ball and then punt it. You can't score if you punt the ball out of the back of the end zone. You can't score if you can't screw up if you punt the ball out of bounds. Don't break the unbreakable rule. That said, other than that, obviously the one we just talked about, Stanford, not just beating Notre Dame, but destroying Notre Dame. And they were 1-4 going into that game. That one was the one that, one, surprised me, and two, immediately made me go to my schedule and draw a big fat X next to the game at Stanford, because I ain't winning that one. If he can do that to Rain, he can do that to me.
Yeah, one thing I want to comment on, that 35-point rule. I was playing a scrim a couple weeks back. I won't say who against. I was up 34 points, got an interception, ran the ball 3 times, even got a first down, and still punted. Newer coach, so you know, he paused and he was like, "Hey man, don't worry about it. Just play the game. Like, it's more disrespectful for you to punt on first and goal than it is to, for you to score a touchdown and go up by 35." And I know it was a scrim, but new guy, get it, like, hey, you know, we're in a scrim, but it's just not worth it. You know, I know some guys may say, well, it's just as disrespectful to do that than it is to go up by 35. Like, it's not. Just don't do it. Just don't go up by 35, and be safe and be smart about it. But yeah, to comment back on some of these games, man, there's one game I really want to give some love and talk about. Rice Owls 44, UTSA 43. That game was being live streamed during some other pretty big games. We had some people in the live chat. I think to Coach M. Barakov or Mark Barakov, he was saying that Rice is one of his big sleeper teams. They are 3-0 in that conference, but that was a 2-point conversion in the first overtime to win the game. So Coach Duty rolling the dice there, not even going for the second overtime, just, you know, right away in that.
Man
first
wanted to
overtime.
Get to bed.
Yeah.
Yeah. Maybe wanted to go to bed.
Yeah, it's fair, but I'm starting to see that a lot, Jason. There was a couple other games in this block that is happening now. That same thing. Guys are rolling the dice even in overtime. I think Shell last night, that game happened. He took it by 1 point. There was about 30 seconds left, and he rolled the dice and ran his best 2-point play to win the game at Ohio State. That keeps him in the mix. So, yeah, seeing that a lot lately.
I'm wondering how much the new rules plays into that, because you've seen that in real life as well a couple times.
Yeah.
Because once you get to that second overtime, and just a tip, the game is screwed up. What a shock. EA messed something up. They will literally tell you, the commentators will literally tell you, hey, you have to go for two if you score the touchdown in second overtime, and then they'll let you kick an extra point. It's the dumbest thing ever.
Oh, I did not know that.
Good old. Oh yeah, I've discovered that in offline dynasty games where I had a game where the computer, I stopped him on the 2-point conversion. I scored the touchdown and then it let me kick the extra point to win the game. And it's just like, what the hell are we doing here? But you wonder, you know, if you're the team that's going first in or second in first overtime, it's almost a thing of, well, if I, you know, I go for it here, or we go into second overtime, I might score a touchdown, not get the 2-point conversion, and then I lose. There's no third overtime if they get the 2-point conversion, or if they kick the extra point if the game lets them. So I'm curious if that plays into it. The other game I think that stood out, not to thump my chest about my Wildcats, but El Jefe bouncing back from kind of a rough start to the season, beating Florida and handing our guy Marion County his first loss of the year, 38-32, in the Swamp.
Yeah, that was a great game. Very, very close game the entire way. There was another one that stood out to me. It was Tulane beating SMU. You look at the box score. SMU was up 13-0 at halftime, and Tulane scored 35 points in the second half to win handily. 21 points in the fourth quarter, 14 points in the third quarter. It looks like it was at Tulane. I'm guessing home field advantage and some turnovers had to play into that. It looks like Jennings did have an interception there, but I got the wrath of home field advantage yesterday. I was playing Nidler and was up 21-3, and I was, next thing I knew, I was down 45-21. And I didn't turn the ball over once either, which was really insane. But yeah, the SEC is starting to shake out. I know we're just kind of looking at week 7 here. Were there any other games, Jason, in week 8 that stood out to you?
In week 8, I don't know if it was a comeback or what. I have to pull up the recap, but Boston College edging our guy Chase and Virginia Tech 21-20. ACC, which I'm a part of, is really becoming a war of attrition. We had a bunch of 1-point games. We had Wyoming, San Jose State. 32-31 win for Licks.
That was another 2-point conversion to seal the deal or to take the lead late.
Nice. See, this is what sucks about me not being able to watch games. Got to give a shout out our guy C Nasty getting his first win of the year, beating Syracuse 21-14. Syracuse kneeling the ball in that first play of the game, and you know it was all downhill from there. Huge shout out to Mark for doing that and sticking to his guns. He's lobbying hard for the NCAA to give him his ratings back. I'm just hoping it doesn't happen before I play him. Sorry, selfishness. And then obviously, you know, one of the big games, Alabama beating Tennessee 31-24. Alabama jumped out to a 14-point lead in that one, and Big Mike was able to hold on and to win that one. But that's all I'll discuss about that game, because I don't want to mention anybody and him get salty about me mentioning him, because apparently that's all I do. So.
Yeah, I want to talk about, we'll talk about the ACC, a good segue. I mean, I see Miami 21-7. They've won 5 in a row. They're back on track. You know, Purdue upsetting Oregon, that was a big one early last week. South Carolina showed some vulnerability there, tied 17-17 going into the fourth quarter against OU. They did pull out the victory to move to 8-0 overall. And then Memphis taking care of business, 7-1, 5-0 in the conference, starting to establish themselves as that team in the group of five that'll, you know, probably get that playoff spot. I know UAB might have something to say about that. But yeah, let's talk about some of the conference races heating up here. We were talking about the ACC. You know, I think the first few blocks of the season, we were really, really high on the SEC and, you know, maybe talked about it to death, maybe bored some of you guys out there with the SEC bias. It's true in real life and on the podcast. But let's talk about the ACC. I won't make you talk about yourself right away, Jason, but tell me, you know, what's it like playing in this conference so far, and what are you seeing from some of these top teams that are in the running for the championship?
Well, first of all, I'm just sitting here scratching my head trying to figure out how Georgia Tech is the only team ranked in the conference. I mean, Block has done a great job with SMU. Dealer's done a great job with Miami. He made me fumble four damn times. No joke, I had to pause the game at one point because I was about to throw my controller through the wall. And I didn't realize that my controller wasn't muted, and we got to the end of the game, and I realized it wasn't muted, and I was like, did you hear me screaming like a madman? He's like, yeah. he's like, my son was asking what was going on, and he was just like, he's having a really rough game. Like, Dealer even said he had never seen anything like that before. It was my quarterback was just fumbling left and right, my running back was fumbling, but, I mean, they're both really good teams. You know, you look at Georgia Tech, what he's done so far, lost to Notre Dame, but lost to Notre Dame and lost to South Carolina, but beat Duke, beat Florida State. I mean, he's had a good season. Dealer in Miami, he's got a great team down there. Block again, I already mentioned, but then, you know, Virginia Tech, Chase is still who he is. He's still one of the better stick guys in this game. You have to bring it every week in this league. You know, I played NC State and the score looked a little lopsided, but same thing with Florida State. But I was in a fight in both of those games. I was constantly having to think about what I was doing, pay attention to what they're doing. I just fortunately have some really good ball hawks in the secondary who are kind of able to turn things around for me. But this is not a conference where you can assume anything. You come in every game here, there's a lot of talented coaches and a lot of talented teams. So how it's going to shake out, I have no clue. Anybody that thinks I'm going to have anything to do with the final say is out of their mind. I've been very fortunate with some of my games. But, you know, I'm still going to play Stanford. I'm still going to play SMU. So I've still got a rough way to go this season.
The thing that stands out to me with this conference is, first thing, I look at the opponent record on the standings. I mean, everyone's opponent record is almost above 500. So, one, that tells me y'all are playing tough out-of-conference schedules, but then, obviously, there's a lot of quality coaches and really good teams in this conference. The other thing that stands out is, I think y'all are just going to beat each other up the whole season. And I don't know. I mean, there's going to be a playoff team out of this conference, but it's just like one team beats the next team and then that team beats another. And then it's just like this revolving circle of parity, like you see in the NFL every year. You know, the circle of parity, I think, always completes itself around week 15 or 16. That's what I'm seeing here out of this conference. Now, I'm still counting some two-loss teams have a chance. I wouldn't count Chase out. He had two losses last year in the Big 12 and made the championship game. You got 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10 teams that are potentially still in the running because, like I said, y'all beat up on each other. But no, Georgia Tech has probably been the best team so far. I was a little critical of Miami and Dealer. I think he was 6-6 last season, didn't have the best season. Early on, he was ranked like 15th or 16th in the preseason polls, but he's really proved me wrong and shut me up. He's, you know, 3-0, won 5 in a row after the 0-2 start. Again, he played some really tough guys to start the season in the out of conference, but you know, don't sleep on Miami. I think you'll see them pop up in the top 25 next week. Same with SMU. I think they'll be right up in there sitting at 6-3, 4-1 in this one. So
yeah, and I mean Virginia Tech, and you're talking about, you know, two losses in the conference. He's 5-3 on the year, but his losses have been to Baylor, who's the number two team in the rankings, Miami, who we just talked about, and then like I said, the 1-point loss to Boston College. So I mean, it's not like he's losing the scrubs. And, you know, going back to why I was shocked that Miami wasn't ranked, again, Miami's strength of schedule, you pointed to it, 33-16.
Yeah, that's insane.
By far one of the toughest schedules in the entire league. He's 5-2 and he's not ranked. I mean, and he's won 3 games on the road.
Yeah.
All three games on the road that he's played.
Yeah, it's a race we'll keep an eye on. We'll jump over to another conference that is very stacked at the top. Again, probably 8 or 9 teams in the running still. Shoot, maybe even more than that. We'll jump to the Big Ten. This is a conference race where you still have 4 undefeated teams with conference records of 5-0, 4-0, 4-0, 2-0. And then you have 4-1. 3 teams are 4-1. I got a 4-2 and a 2-1, and then you got Shell with 2 losses as well. So by no means out of it, but this is one where I guess I'm a little surprised to see the teams I'm seeing at the top. I think, of course, the biggest surprise is Ohio State 0-3 in the conference. Just 3 really close losses. You know, you can't fault him. I know he doesn't get to play the game as much. I think really the only games that Daniel plays, you said on one podcast episode, Jason, was he just plays his NDL games. So maybe the league's catching up a little bit, but give us a breakdown here on the Big Ten conference.
Well, I'd say 2 close losses because Iowa beat him 38-13.
That's right. Right, that's right too.
But yeah, 1-point loss to Oregon and Shell, 1 touchdown loss to Michigan State. You know, we talked earlier this season about the SEC going from, you know, guys who drafted high to being a big boy league. Big Ten's the same thing. You know, you've got Nidler at Penn State now. You've got Freak at Michigan. You've got a lot of good coaches that have come into this conference. You got this RB4 SC22 guy at Wisconsin who's doing decent.
Guy stinks.
So, I mean, you've got a lot of good coaches who have come into the conference now, and it's the same deal. It's a war of attrition because Ohio State's 3 losses have all been in conference. His strength of schedule is 27-15. So, again, it's every week you have to bring it. And, you know, for a guy like Daniel who doesn't get to play this game as much, doesn't get to practice a whole lot, doesn't get to learn some of the X's and O's behind the scenes stuff that some of us get just from playing scrims or playing dynasties or whatever, It does make it tougher. Handicapping this one, my God. I mean,
yeah.
Nebraska doesn't have a coach right now, and they're sitting at 4-1. Nidler's rolling with Penn State, Freak's rolling with Michigan, Wild's 7-1 with Iowa. I mean, you've still got Maryland, Wisconsin, Michigan State all sitting at 4-1 in the conference. I mean, this is going to come down to the wire. And this could be another situation that we've talked about before where you almost may want to finish third, where you don't lose a game in the conference championship and possibly knock yourself out of the playoff.
Yeah, that's a good point. The teams that I'm keeping an eye on here are Brady at Maryland, Roque at Michigan State, and then Dub at Washington. Like you said, these are some guys who could end up going like 9-3. Maybe they win, you know, Washington wins their last 3 or Brady wins his next 4. And maybe the tiebreaker, maybe they're not the second place team. Maybe they're the third place team and they're not playing in that conference championship game. Does a 9-3 Maryland get in? Does a 9-3 Michigan State get in? Probably yes, because of their strength of schedule. They've played some really tough games. But it's going to be interesting because that's going to be like that threshold of 3 losses. You mentioned Nebraska, and I've kind of mentioned my thoughts on this in the live chat. Unfortunate that Spidey had to leave. I know he was a friend of Tim's and just kind of wasn't enjoying, I guess, the game as much as some of us and, you know, just wasn't into it. Heart wasn't into it. That's fine. You know, we would have loved for him to finish the season. I would actually recommend if anyone's on that fence, 1, talk to us, talk to Nidler, conference commissioner, somebody, and see if there's a solution. And then 2, you know, I would really urge you to finish out the season because, honestly, if the game comes out next year and all of a sudden Spidey loves it again, maybe we'll let him back in the league. I don't know. I can't really answer that question, but you always want to leave on good terms. You always want to finish out the season, you know, if you can, or if you absolutely can't, you know, please let us know, of course. But back to the Big Ten. I'm with you here. I kind of think of looking at the matchups, a lot of these teams, of course, play each other. They're in the same conference, but it's going to, I think you're going to see like a 2-loss team in this conference championship. And I mean, a 2 conference loss team. I just don't think these teams can. I don't think you're going to see a team that goes 9-0 in the conference. So
Good. And we have a new, you know, Schelt sitting at 2-2 in the conference, 5-2 in the season. He's lurking down there. You know, Washington's 4-2 in the conference and 6-3 on the season. So, I mean, there are a lot of teams that have a say in this. Purdue can play spoiler. I'm calling it now. This is a Purdue team that is 2-4 on the season. They're 2-1 in conference. They've already caused some problems. They caused problems last season, albeit with a different coach. But, you know, beating Notre Dame, which we hadn't even really talked about yet, that was a shocker. Losing to Notre Dame, beating Oregon. This is what happens when you're trying to wean yourself off caffeine and not have caffeine later in the day. You completely misread things. But beating Oregon at Oregon by 13, like that is one of those things you would put in the, yeah, what the hell just happened column. Especially for a team, like I said, lost 4 games to start the season. They're probably not going to make a bowl, but that's the kind of win that screws up Shell's season potentially.
Yeah, I mean, I feel like we've seen this movie before. Now it's a little bit different. It's a tougher conference, but if I'm not mistaken, I want to say Shell was kind of in the same spot last year, where maybe it wasn't 2 conference losses, but I could have swore he was sitting at 2 losses toward the end of the season, and then it was almost to the benefit of taking 3rd in that conference champion or that conference race in the Big 12 and not having to play the championship game, which got him ultimately into the playoff and through the first round. But we'll keep an eye on this race as well. Not going to make any predictions. And of course, we'll just stick to these two. We'll beat the SEC to death again next week. Let's talk about one more conference.
By the way, Shell, you know, Shell's, how do I put this? Shell's no stranger to throwing things away.
Oh. Moving on.
Sorry, Shell. Had to do it.
We'll move on to the American Athletic Conference. We'll talk 1G5 today. This one's really shaping up to be fun. We had Memphis. You know, I think people were kind of sleeping on them, and boom, look, they're 7-1, 5-0 in the conference. And then you have a team kind of coming out of nowhere. I know Coach Jack B came in last season toward the end, replacement coach. But he's also sitting there at 7-1, a little bit stronger of a schedule so far than Memphis. But I think these two have a date with destiny. I think next block. I don't know, it might be this one. I'm not up on the teams page. But let's talk about this race. And then, you have another new coach in Nick, who I think just took over Temple, sitting at 2-0. Pretty wide open, but I think the two top dogs are starting to separate themselves. Give us your take on the AAC, Jason.
Yeah, I mean, Memphis went on the road at Oregon, lost by 15. So obviously they've played a tougher opponent, but they didn't get the win. You know, UAB, I don't know, because there's not a team that I look at on there and go, oh, that's a signature win. But they've also been squeaking by on some of these. I mean, a 1-point win at Tulane, 2-point win against Army. You know, you look at Memphis, and he's been winning every single game handily. The closest game he's had was at Wake Forest, which is a Power 4 school, and he won that one by 3. But every other game, it's been, you know, 26, 21, you know, 31. These are big wins. These are the kind of wins that we were talking about earlier, where you're punting the ball back to the other coach and saying, hey, you know, practice, go run some plays, try to score on me, that sort of thing. For me, Memphis has the edge if when they do meet next block, just based on the fact that he's winning comfortably. Now, that said, UAB's finding a way to win tight games, so it could be a situation where maybe he gets, you know, if he can keep it close, maybe it puts a little bit of pressure on Memphis, and UAB can rely on that. But I was on Memphis early in the season when we talked about this, and I'm still on Big Red to get it done here and potentially crash the college football playoff.
Yeah, there's two other teams that I think can really play spoiler here. I think the Rice Owls, of course, we talked about them a little bit earlier, And then I look down the list. There's a team that's sitting at 0-1 in conference play. So they have a lot of games left in front of them and could really go on a run here. 3-2 overall. Tulane had the big win against SMU. I want to say Tilnatius was pretty solid last season as well. Again, new coach came in, took over, and turned around a season over there. And then don't sleep on East Carolina. You know, they got everything to play for as well, too. They were off to a hot start. You know, this is going to be interesting because I feel like we're at a point in the league where, you know, we're getting pretty close to the end. We only have two more blocks after block five. But I think you might have brought it up last week. You're going to see someone play like four or five games in a week and get caught back up and be like, oh, holy crap, they're at the top of the conference, or they're 7-2 when, you know, last week they were looking at 3-2. So, yeah, that's a little bit of a shameless plug telling you guys to get your games in and catch up. Don't have any Sims later this season. But I am going to ask you to pick this one. I know you said you had like Memphis already. Who do you think would be the best game for them in the conference championship?
I think East Carolina could cause some problems. You know, he's lost two games, but one of those was a 2-point loss against Miami, and we've already talked about Dealer. Mm-hmm. Kay Grader's a solid coach. I think he's going to be there at the end. The problem is that he doesn't get to play Memphis, so he's not going to be able to knock them out of a spot. Mm-hmm. I think it'll end up being Memphis and UAB just because of the fact that they've already got such a big lead. The other teams behind them don't really have any opportunity or any room to slip up. But again, looking at the two teams, looking at the talent on the two rosters and the results that they've had, Memphis just has better players. So barring any kind of, you know, EA screw job, I don't see Memphis losing out on this one. They'll beat UAB twice.
Yeah, they're a great team in this game. They're fun to play with. They're rated better than a lot of these teams in this conference. I will say, say Memphis gets to that conference championship, you got to imagine the Mountain West is going to be watching that game closely, because if you get, you know, 11-1 Memphis playing a 10-2 UAB, and then all of a sudden UAB knocks off Memphis in the championship, don't think 11-2 UAB is scratching the playoff, unfortunately. But then you got to look at the Mountain West, because I'm sure the winner of that conference, if they're sitting at 12-1, they're probably going to be very interested in the results. So you could see, you know, a big upset late in the season that maybe knocks someone out of the playoff and opens the door for someone else in that conference championship of the group five.
Yeah, and speaking of, you know, we talked about last week about San Diego State and New Mexico on a crash course, and then we cursed them. San Diego State goes out and loses 41-36 at Washington State. One of those pesky games where it doesn't count towards the conference, but it's technically a conference game, but it's not really a conference game because Washington State doesn't have a conference, but they get to play against the conference. And yeah. It was a game that I lost last year, and because it didn't affect the conference standings, I was still able to go undefeated in the Mountain West. It made absolutely no sense, but yeah, so we've already jinxed that one, and then those two are going to play each other next week. So, I mean, that's essentially an elimination game for San Diego State there. If New Mexico loses that one and they're both sitting at one loss, then yeah, we've got multiple group of five teams that are going into these last two blocks with no room for error whatsoever.
Yeah, good luck if you're on the committee figuring that one out. That's a job that, I mean, I'm sure it'll be fun, but I can't say I would want to have to decide and pick someone to represent the group of five.
Speaking of, I believe we have our committee.
I do not. Is it finalized? Is that what the message I just saw come through was?
I thought it was. Maybe not. I thought I saw some discussion earlier today. But we're getting close to that point. We're going to have a committee reveal, not a Massey reveal, but an actual committee reveal.
Yeah, we will have. Actually, are we going to reveal the committee? I thought we wanted to keep that private. I don't know. We'll get.
No. I mean, they'll have get their committee results revealed. We're not going to come out and tell you who the committee is.
Yeah. Behind closed doors. No, we'll have Six on next week and have him talk about it. He is not on the committee. I just want to put that out there. He is merely leading it, guiding it, if you will. But yeah, we'll have our first CFP ranking next week. And another great segue, let's talk about the top 25, because I think that's been a topic of discussion I've seen some comments about, oh, San Diego State's too high, New Mexico's too high. Like, you know, it's the coaches' poll, right? So it's the people, it's democracy, right? We're all voting on who we believe should be in the top 25. But I know there's been some pain points out there of like, well, Kentucky and A&M are better than those two teams. Why aren't they in the top 25? But let's break down the coaches' poll. Obviously, we're seeing it right here. You got another 9 teams in the SEC in the top 25. I'm sure you have Kentucky and A&M scratching as well, sitting at 6-2 coming in next week. But what are your thoughts on this version of the top 25?
So, I mean, for me personally, you know, one of the things that I've always looked at is strength of schedule. And I know that in the chat earlier today, Pat said, well, there's no explanation for anybody to have anybody other than Kansas number one. I disagree, because South Carolina has put together one hell of a resume. And, you know, I look at not just, you know, your record, but who have you played, who have you beaten? And I try to put a lot of stake into that. I will put a team that has two losses over a one-loss team if they've played a tougher schedule. And South Carolina this season, you know, we've talked about Georgia Tech already. Trounced Georgia Tech 38-14. Took down Big Mike by 2 touchdowns, beating Alabama, has beaten some really solid teams, went to LSU and won by 13. This is a really good coach with a team that isn't as highly rated as a lot of the teams in the SEC and is still going out and whooping ass with them. It's a team that right now, personally, I feel is the best team in the league. Yes, I get that Kansas is undefeated and is the reigning champion. I've still got them in the top 5. It doesn't mean that I think they're a bad team. I just think South Carolina right now is the best team in the league.
Yeah, I think both things can be true, right? You can talk about, well, Kansas won it last year. They won the cup last year. They haven't lost yet this year. They should be number one. Something very similar happened in real life. I think Florida State in 2014 won it all. In 2015, they kept winning every game and were ranked number one every week. But I think the eye test showed that like they weren't quite the top team. But there is nothing wrong with voting a team who is the defending champion and, you know, probably the best player in this league number one, even if they don't have the strength of schedule or haven't had the big wins. Well, Kansas has. Kansas has taken care of business and won every game almost by 35. Or you can vote someone who is deserving, like South Carolina, like Baylor, teams who have played a little bit tougher of a schedule so far. I don't think one or the other is right or wrong. I think either can be true. But I'm with you. I think one thing that surprises me here, I know Florida lost to Kentucky. It was a tough loss, but I think Florida is like the third best coach in this league, third best user, if you will, maybe even second. I think the top two teams are perfectly ranked right now, or top three, I should say. But I thought Florida would be higher. No shade to DK, and I love the dude. I think he's ranked a little high, and then obviously he did just lose, so that'll fall a little more. But yeah, that was the biggest surprise to me. One thing I'm going to kind of complain about.
I take pride in that, by the way, because I had Florida 6th and Georgia 7th in my poll.
There you go.
So I had Florida ahead of Georgia.
There you go. I'm going to kind of vent for a second. Actually, I won't vent, but one thing that annoys me is when maybe a lot of guys didn't know this yet, but Nebraska left the league, I think, last Wednesday. And then to still see them in the top 25, like, I get it. They're 4-1 still, or 5-1 or whatever. They don't have a coach, guys. Like, I just don't see how you can vote a team in the top 25 that doesn't have a coach, even if they are great. I mean, this is, again, my rule of thumb. You can follow it. You can say F off RB. I don't care. But if they don't have a coach, they shouldn't be in the top 25. And you know what? If that new coach comes in and wins 2 games in a row and is looking great, great. Let's throw them back in the top 25. That's just my rule of thumb. I think it's just kind of silly to have a team sitting there with no coach. But again, he left quietly. It wasn't announced. It wasn't public. So I know some of y'all might not have realized that, even though it says the coach on there when you vote for the team in your poll. But those were a couple of things. And then Tennessee, you know, I know we talk about him a lot. He thinks we hate him. We don't. It's not personal. But lost 2 games, still in the top 25. I think we'll probably see them drop out next week, and Ohio State as well, still up there. But I'm going to shout out Nidler, too, at Penn State. He's going to shoot up the rankings after this week. I was surprised he wasn't higher. I think I had him like 14th or 15th in my poll. But yeah, I mean, you're going to see this graphic change a lot over the next 2 weeks.
Yeah, I had Nidler 17th in my poll. I also did not have Nebraska. So again, pat on my back.
Yeah.
Well. Utah was a team that I thought I had Utah closer to 10th and 15th, which is where he was at. San Diego State, you know, people were saying, well, why is he ranked higher? I had him 23rd, but I get it. You know, he's undefeated. He was at the point undefeated on the season. But again, it goes for me, you know, who have you beaten now? The one caveat to that was I had Texas up high. I did not realize, but I had played Texas in my cup game. So that was part of why I put him up there, because I played him and saw how good he was. His record is, or his strength of schedule is 4-24. That might be the worst strength of schedule I've ever seen this far into a season. And he's sitting at 4-0. Like, Tech, come on, people. We got to get some games in for Texas.
I was going to say, that's
his opponent, his strength of schedule is going to kill him here.
Well, that's going to shoot up once he plays Georgia and Florida and all these teams that he has on his schedule. But I'm with you. And it's another complaint I've heard is like, oh, how can you rank Texas so high? He's only played four games. Well, it's like, we all know who Steam is. You know, he was in the national championship last year. Again, there's no wrong way to do this other than voting for a team that doesn't have a coach.
Biggest snub was Texas A&M not being ranked. I think he was 5-2 coming into the week. I had him 19th on mine, but to not be ranked, I mean, if you're sitting at 5-2 in the SEC, you've done something right.
Yeah, Kentucky, Texas A&M, Miami. These are all teams that I think you'll see up there sooner rather than later. Love to see Riccio getting in the top 25 here. Pat said it a couple weeks ago. He might be one of the best players in this league. It's just a shame that he always plays at UConn, because if he were to take a top tier team like a Georgia, Bama, he might be a coach that could win this whole thing.
I mean, he might sneak into the playoffs.
Yeah, I know.
Don't count him out yet.
We'll talk more about that next week, but let's talk a little bit about the CFP. I know we just talked about it a little bit before this, but is there any, I guess, theme you think we'll see from the first ranking once it comes out? I guess you don't have to predict 1 through 12, but is there anything that you want to predict or you think you'll see in this first top 25?
I think we're going to see 7 SEC teams, because it just means more.
I could see that.
No, it's going to be interesting to see. You look at the rankings, the poll rankings, you've got 6 SEC teams in the top 10, and that's not including Kentucky, that's not including Texas A&M, doesn't include Tennessee. You know, it's going to be very interesting to see who the committee puts in and who they leave out, because they cannot have all 6 teams in, I don't think. There's too many good teams in the Big 10 and in the Big 12 to leave that many teams out. I'm very curious to see how they grade on it. The other thing that's going to be curious, and I, you know, this is tricky for them, and I don't know how they're going to work around this, but the other theme is that there will be results that take place. You know, real life, we have games on Saturday, and then we have a couple of days to look everything over and make a decision, but nobody's playing between the time that those games end on Saturday and when the results come out on Tuesday. That doesn't happen here. So these guys are going to be getting in a room, or, you know, virtual room, and putting this together, and then an hour after they do that, somebody's going to lose a big game. And the league, I implore everybody in the league, when you're reacting to these first rankings that come out, take that into consideration and don't give these guys a hard time, because there's no way that they can constantly be fluidly looking at everything. And if a game, you know, goes down while they're putting this together, it's not fair to them to say, okay, well, we've got to stop and reevaluate all our data. They got to have a hard stop point where they go, okay, we're taking everything before 7 p.m. on Sunday night. So keep that in mind when we're reacting to those things, and know that there's going to be some lag time and some overlap with this, and try to suspend a little bit of that analysis. And know that these guys are doing a very difficult job, and they're not getting paid for it, and it's purely for the enjoyment and engagement of this league. And be very thankful that we have them, because Massey, you know, it's a great tool, but as we saw last year, it kind of gave us some weird results when we got to the end of the season. So I'm glad we have this committee. I appreciate all the work they're going to do on this. And just keep that in mind, please, because I know that we can really overanalyze some of this stuff sometimes.
Yeah, and there's always going to be some banter and some crap talk, but I second that. I will say I think one thing we're going to see out of this first top 25 is I think you're going to see more power conference big dogs because that's kind of where a lot of the talent is in this league. No discredit to the lower conferences, but after the first season, when you have a legitimate draft based on results and based on coaching scores, that's how the NDL works. That's how it was, you know, 10 years ago and so on. So I think you're going to see a lot of big dogs. I think you're going to see some of these smaller conference teams not fall completely out of the rankings, but, you know, be in that 20 to 25 range. But yeah, the human element is going to be huge. And I think that's the best way to do this. You know, the Massey was great. It's a good data point, but I'm excited to see what other data the committee's using. We've had some guys in this league, and I'll shout them out. Freak at Michigan has been keeping track of all the ranked wins this year and all the ranked games that are going on. So you get to see, and they'll get some access to stats to evaluate and make a full body decision of who's most deserving, who's the top dog, who's, you know, who's that 12th team, who's that group of five team. It's going to be really cool to see that human part of it.
Yep. And that, I really like that rank list too. I didn't realize that we had that. And so I saw somebody post earlier. I was looking over it. I saw a familiar team in there with a couple ranked wins. So
yeah, it wasn't, we didn't have it public until I think today, or maybe it was yesterday he posted it. But yeah, it's out there. You can see, you know, who was ranked when, and you know, who beat how many ranked teams. And then that way you can't necessarily argue that, oh, well, they aren't ranked at the end of the season. Well, they were ranked 15th back then. You know, it's going to be, going to be cool to see all that stuff. And, you know, I wonder if at some point we'll get a committee member anonymously on the show, or maybe publicly on the show like they do in real life, to say, hey, how did you decide over this? get someone in here to talk about that in real time. But yeah, look out for it next week. We'll have a live show, I believe, on Tuesday. And then the last thing I want to end on is just a little housekeeping note. A couple things to keep an eye out. So, like, I'll call it my NDL media update. So you got the podcast coming to you. You had game day get loaded up yesterday. So on Saturday mornings, game day happens from about 9 central to about 10:30 central time. And sorry, I'm on central time. So those are the ones I'm using. That'll get posted, the recording, the following day. So on Sunday, Jason and I try our best to get this thing out on Monday morning, but life happens and we are getting it out on Tuesday. And then we have a load of articles coming this week to kind of keep you guys busy and engaged. I have a power rankings article coming out that was written by me. Again, it's just my own personal power rankings that I'm doing. Tomorrow we'll have an article coming out from 6 feet deep, just explaining what's about to happen with the college football playoff. He's going to do some predictions and some things. Again, he's not on the committee, just him. And then Wednesday, we will finally have our first edition of PTI, which is going to be the NDL Pardon the Interruption show, where we have two or three of us on, just kind of hot topic, going through questions, a quick 30-minute audio show to give you some more content in the middle of the week. And then Thursday, we are hopeful and planning to have some sort of live cast game of the week, working with some coaches now to get that scheduled. It was such an awesome experience in season 29 coming back. Really going to make an effort to get that moving again. And then Friday will be a dark day with no content or nothing going on. So that's the NDL media schedule. Jason, anything to add to any of that, or really anything in general?
No, I mean, just everybody keep getting your games in. I think now that we're into this second season, you're seeing a lot more engagement. You're seeing a lot of the newer coaches, you know, really settling in, and everybody understands the rules. So for the most part, we're getting some new guys in here. So I know that we've got a couple new guys that joined this week. So if this is your first podcast with us, welcome. I know we're doing some scrimmages with guys to get them ready, but we're entering these last two blocks at the end of this week and next week, and we're going to have our season ending right about the same time that the real college football season ends. Yeah. And it's going to be really fun to see how the ratings update that's probably going to come right around then impact things going into the playoffs. You know, you look at some of these teams in real life. You know, we talked earlier about DK or about Miami. Sorry, I don't know why I said DK. I was thinking Canes.
Canes.
You know, Cam Ward probably going to get that bump. They're probably going to get a bump there. You know, does a team like Notre Dame take a hit? Does a team like LSU take a hit? Does a team like Florida take a hit when the coach in here is doing well with them? So that is going to be one of those wild cards that I think is going to play a big, big factor in how this season plays out, because you could have a team be really, really good in the game and lose a key player or have a key player take a big hit in their rating right before the playoff.
Yeah, I think it's either next block or the one after, but we are going to have the NDL Equinox. And for those who are not familiar, it's when the real life game is happening while the same NDL block or week is happening. So happy NDL Equinox to those who celebrate. No, I actually think week 12 is this weekend. We'll open up block, the next block, which would have 11 and 12 in there.
Except it's going to be weird because the home team is going to be the away team in real life and vice versa.
Yeah, I know. I did realize that the other day. I was like, oh yeah, like had I had that game at home, because like Wisconsin actually played Penn State at home this season in real life, maybe it would have been a different result. No. But yeah, that's coming up. And then, you know, we'll do our best to keep providing some good content here and keep you guys engaged. And yeah, I think that's really all we had today. Any last words, Jason?
No, it's been fun.
Yeah, it has been. Actually, I do have one more thing. Nidler had sent out some announcements and messages just about gameplay and cleaning up the NDL. Just know that, you know, if you are a newer coach in your first two seasons and you get a message from a conference commissioner or the Nidler himself about your gameplay, just know it is not a personal attack on you. It is not a sore loser. It is just, hey, we have a standard of gameplay here that is expected to be followed. And I'm sorry, but running the same play 8 or 9 times in a game is not acceptable. Running even the same play 3 out of 5 plays in one drive is not acceptable. So just know that this league was built in 2004. It has stood the test of time. It has returned after 10 years. It is because it's just the standard and the style that our community enjoys and that is fair and fun and enjoyable for everybody. So again, not a personal attack. You know, if you have questions, if you need help, let us know. But I think one thing is, you know, at some point you got to answer the question for yourself. Do you like this community? Do you want to be here? If the answer is yes, I would suggest not getting testy or upset about gameplay comments. I would really try to take them as best you can with an open mind and just know it's, again, not something directed at you or we don't like you or we don't want you here. We wouldn't be bringing it up if we didn't want you here. We would probably just move on from you. And so we don't want to do that. We don't want to replace coaches. So just take everything with an open mind. And if you have questions, you know, please ask. Or if you don't want to talk to that certain conference commissioner at that moment, or you're mad at the person you just played, like go talk to somebody else and just kind of get their perspective as well to see if, you know, we can find a solution or help in any way. So just wanted to end on that note.
I do have one thing to add, actually, because the ACC was down 5-1, in the ACC versus Big 12 challenge. And our boys have rallied. We are now down 6-5. We've got 2 games left. Wake Forest, we need you to come through. It's Wake Forest and it's Boston College. If they can win the last 2 games against Wake Forest plays Central Florida and Boston College plays Texas Tech. If they can win the last 2 games, we will rally from a 5-1 deficit to win the ACC Big 12 Challenge. So if people need some stuff, there's a possibility that Wake Forest and Central Florida are playing tonight. I don't know if that is happening or not. But hopefully those 2 games are going to get played this week and the ACC is going to pull off the greatest comeback in digital football history.
It reminds me, I got to play Big Mike. Big 10 is getting kind of beat up on. I think it's 8-2 right now. I don't even think we can mathematically come back. Well, I guess we can. There's 16 teams, so if we won six in a row. But no, that's great. That's been a great addition to the league. Shout out Florida Man, FL Man University for having that idea and getting it started in some of the smaller conferences. And then keep an eye out, too. We're going to have some exciting stuff similar to NDL Blitz launching in the coming weeks that some guys have been working really hard on. So I know 5 minutes ago we said we were wrapping up and we were done and we kept going, but we are finally done here. Jason, appreciate you as always. Have a great week, everybody. Get your games in, and we will see you next week.